I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
While you're taking a break from sports, KSON is putting you on the road to Stagecoach 8 times every weekday, thanks to your San Diego County Toyota dealers and Cox Communications. Ready for 3 days of live country music in the desert? Sign up now at KSON.com.
There are some landmines the rest of the way, but they got the shot. Coach, we'll be checking in with you as we get up toward March Madness. And
they're quite aware of what they're going through.
You know I'm a good sport.
Yeah,
is this bordering on kind of mean at this point?
Why?
Just hammering on me. Check.
I'm not even 100%.
Check. Check.
Is this what you've been spending all morning doing, Paul, over there? Just the entire morning.
It didn't take me that long.
As I am deceased. Come here to get.
Could have been chasing other, big name guests, or setting up intriguing topics for the show instead.
Check.
What he's been doing all morning over there. Check. Fantastic. Good work.
Can you put that out as an audiogram?
Check. Or we just release it as a single on our next album.
Yes.
Check. Check. Already have the trust fall video that we put out this morning.
It's been a rough morning for you.
I didn't trust Hammer. Check. My voice is gone. It's just you're driving me to it. I might have to call in sick tomorrow if this continues. And then everyone would miss Ben Reed's raps, and it's your guys' fault. Don't push me any more than you already have.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Check. Alex Cora got fired by the Red Sox. Do you remember that?
I do.
You start singing about it again?
Yeah, maybe I'll sing Changes.
Check.
Would you like to join me?
Making some changes
in Boston.
With the Red Sox, with the Astros, and maybe making some changes with the New York Mets. That's the new focus has shifted to Carlos Beltran's role.
Indeed.
In the cheating scandal. And the new manager of the Mets hasn't even managed a game, hasn't shown up to spring training yet, has come under fire with many people around baseball saying that he should lose his job as well because of his role with the Astros during the 2017 season as a player. And according to the report, is one of the key players in the cheating scandal. Not just one of the many guys who took advantage of it, but perhaps one of the guys who helped kind of put it together and orchestrate it along with Alex Cora. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. And, he was protected because he was a player at the time, so he's protected by the players' union. That being said, if you're the New York Mets and you have... Who was their manager last year? What was it Clown's name? Mickey Callaway. You had Mickey Callaway. You were under he was awful. He was an awful manager and not the right fit in New York, the whole thing. So you go out and you get Carlos Beltran. And you cannot start Carlos Beltran's stint off as being implicated in this giant Manfred report. We had the Mitchell report. We've got the Manfred report now. You cannot start. He's not even managed one game. And the cloud of suspicion... I guess he could go in and say, hey, I promise I'm not going to do anything like that again. It's a matter of if you take him at his word or not. Now, it's going to be a difficult road, an even more difficult road for the Mets to traverse with Carlos Beltran as the manager than it would if even Mickey Callaway was the manager, because he didn't have this cloud of suspicion hanging over him. In good conscience, Ben, I don't understand how you could start your season with him as the manager. I really don't.
At the same time, what message does it send if Carlos Beltran, who was a player at the time,
yeah,
gets punished now, post-career as a manager? Does that mean every single person, every player on the 2017 Astros, from Jose Altuve on down, when they retire in 10 years and Jose Altuve wants to be a coach, does he immediately get suspended? Does he not get hired in 10 years as a coach?
It's a really good point.
Carlos Correa, if he wants to be
Alex Bregman,
a minor league skipper. No, you can't do that after your career. Alex Bregman. Do they all just wait until the end of their careers and then Major League Baseball comes down on them? Because to me, that's not the right way to handle this. You can't just simply say, well, we can't punish you as a player, but just wait. As soon as you are done, we are going to come down on you. And, I mean, you're not going to get a job in this business ever again.
It's the shroud. It's the shroud of it's the shroud of suspicion that hangs over Carlos Beltran. And it's really not even suspicion. It's been proven. And people have admitted it and ratted him out or whatever you want to say, right? He's been implicated. It's the implication, Ben. And if I think in 10 years, you know, I don't think that's going to be a problem for Jose Altuve. It's so fresh. It's so fresh. And three heads have already rolled. And you're the last guy standing. You're the only one implicated that hasn't lost your job. Out of the four guys named, three of them are gone. Okay. And Beltran would be the fourth. How do you go on with it being so fresh in your first, before you've even managed the game? How do you go on?
I don't like making decisions based on how fresh something is. It's either the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do. And if it's the right thing to do now, it should be the right thing to do in 5 years. And if it's the wrong thing to do in 5 years, then it's the wrong thing to do now. If the Mets are simply firing Carlos Beltran because they don't want to deal with the PR ramifications,
that would be it. I mean, that's pretty much
that's not the right thing to do. Now, if they want to, if they fire him because they feel like it's an integrity issue and that, you know, they wouldn't hire anyone and any Astros player is painted with that same brush, well, then why isn't Major League Baseball punishing the players at this point? Then that's an indictment on Rob Manfred and the investigation, that they're not going far enough, that they're not sanctioning the players. If you sanction Carlos Beltran as manager of the Mets, then you should be punishing all of his teammates right now as players on the Houston Astros, because you're essentially what they did. They knew it was wrong. They did it. They cheated the game. Suspend them all then. But then the Astros don't have a team. They don't get to play the season. The owner doesn't get to make any money. You're damaging your own sport. So you're being hypocritical by either not suspending Carlos Beltran and then let me phrase that a different way. You're being hypocritical if you suspend or fire Carlos Beltran and do nothing to any of his other teammates, or you're being hypocritical if you do nothing to the rest of the Astros and then hold it all against Carlos Beltran.
But if your whole bit is the definition of right and wrong is your barometer, what he did was wrong. He shouldn't have a job.
Probably.
Right.
If you feel like that strongly about it.
That being said, but Ben, here's
the people who are calling for his job obviously feel that strongly about it.
Here's the other thing. Somebody made this analogy the other day and I loved it. Have you ever been caught? You probably haven't. You ever been caught speeding and you're like, but everybody else was speeding around me and you pulled me over? Yeah, man, life sucks. That's how it works sometimes. Bregman wasn't named. Altuve, they weren't named. They were the beneficiaries because they were the guys on the field. And I understand Beltran not only benefited from it, but he was instrumental in helping Alex Cora create it, hone it, get it down to the science that they used. So his involvement, I think, is even more than just the, hey, bang twice for a changeup, right? Which he totally benefited from. But he was also instrumental in helping Alex Cora create this. And therein lies the, hey, man, you were definitely on the team. We know that. And you definitely benefited from it. And you helped kind of create this whole thing. I think if you're the Mets and you're essentially a walking PR nightmare anyway, how do you start? Like, this guy's never managed. And it sucks. I've always liked Carlos Beltran. I really have. And I can't imagine what he's going through right now. But you can't be surprised if they say, you know what, we don't want to deal with this, and let them go.
How much stock do you put in the tweet and delete? Because if you're trying to read the tea leaves into what the Mets are going to do, there was an interesting post. So apparently the niece of Carlos Beltran tweeted out, my tío Carlos is stepping down as Mets manager, little crying face emoji.
Crazy.
But then deleted it. It's not there anymore. You can say, well, maybe she made a mistake. Maybe she heard wrong. That's why she deleted it. It tends to be one of those in my mind when there's some smoke, there tends to be fire behind that. Someone doesn't just accidentally tweet that. They tweet it, and then someone tells them, oh, that's not supposed to be out yet.
Idiot.
We're not announcing that until Friday. Don't put that out there right now. Or maybe she misunderstood something and then deleted it. There's possible explanations both way. It's the fact that it's there, though, is you can't just completely ignore it because
Correct.
It was deleted.
Yeah, the tweet and delete, I think there's some credence behind that. A lot. And I just wonder, and again, think about this, Benny. They fired Mickey Callaway before his contract was up. They may fire Carlos Beltran today. He'll get some sort of payout. He signed the contract. They're going to have to hire. Imagine paying three managers for 1 year. Imagine the Mets having to pay three guys to manage the team.
I think the Browns are paying like five head coaches right now.
It is just one of those deals, man. Like, you can't start that tenure under this cloud. And I really believe that. We've seen it in, remember remember George O'Leary? Remember that story of Notre Dame?
The resume faking George O'Leary.
He had something just it was inaccurate and made up on his resume, and he got the head football coaching job at Notre Dame. Big one, right? New York Mets, big organization, huge. Biggest media market in the world. And what happens to George O'Leary? They're like, sorry, dude, you lied. I mean, we caught you, you lied, you're out. And he was out, never coached a game. And of course, it's embarrassing, it's a black mark, you move on. You can't be under this, you can't have a black mark now and then hire a black mark manager and to start your career with the Mets under this cloud of suspicion. Actually, not suspicion.
Interesting to see what the Mets are going to do with Carlos Beltran. Would you ever have that feeling, you're watching television and all of a sudden you go, hey, I know that guy. I mean, obviously when you watch me, you probably have that.
I do that all
every time.
You're not surprised, though.
I had one of those surprise, like I'm not expecting it, and all of a sudden I was watching Wheel of Fortune last night, and it was like, wait, I know that guy. Had him on a podcast recently.
My mother texted me from Texas last night. She was watching Wheel of Fortune with my father, and said, do you know this guy? And I said, I do. I'm Facebook friends with him. And he was on friggin' Wheel of Fortune. He's from here.
Derek Dawson works for the Gulls, is going to join us next to talk about his winning performance on Wheel of Fortune last night. That was really, really cool. Find out a little bit more behind the scenes. Pat Sajak, Vanna White, the whole story. It's coming up next. Right now, let's get a check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan with Ben and Woods. Here's Kelly Danick.
Benny, our five-tool producer, made a giant mistake on Twitter. He's going to chat with our pal, P-A-L-L, about his experience. This is what happens, man. Whenever I run mouth, it always comes back to me, and I get schooled.
Is spelling one of the tools? I'm not sure.
I mean, yeah.
Running the board.
A five-tool producer would never misspell the word pal.
On air ability.
He's now Pal Reindel for the rest. Pal Reindel.
Running the board with power. I don't even know what the five tools of radio are. But
it's amazing.
Spelling, at least on social media posts, would be a big one.
Everyone on Padres Twitter has me terrified. I proofread my tweets 7,000 times because I know I'm going to get. My point gets lost if I misspell a word.
I always tweet it, then see it 2 seconds later, and then scramble to have to delete it and change it when I catch the typo or the autocorrect mistake. We will talk to our pal,
Paul,
in just a second. First, though, Hammer just told me that our biggest fan did not call in. Good news out there. That means our prize is available right now. We're giving away a 4-pack of tickets to SeaWorld, and we'll enter someone into our grand prize drawing for the Las Vegas trip to see Aerosmith. Be the fifth caller right now, 833-288-0973, 833-288-0973. And who knows, you may be off to Vegas later this year to catch Aerosmith at the Park MGM.
Amanda.
M.
No, Stacy.
L.
Two L's. Derek, what letter?
P.
Yeah. There, let him come up. Two P's. And then Vanna will move out, and then you'll tell us what's up there.
Pulled pork sandwich.
Yeah, there you go.
That was the final puzzle on last night's Wheel of Fortune that aired locally on Channel 7. And just looking up there, and I go, wait, I know that guy.
I know that guy, too.
Joining us right now on our SDCCU fan hotline, working for the San Diego Gulls, barbecue aficionado, which is amazing that that final puzzle was
pulled pork
sandwich. Derek Dawson is with us here on Ben and Woods. Derek, congratulations on the win last night. That was amazing.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, it was a good time.
I'm sitting there last night. My mom texts me from Texas. She's watching Wheel of Fortune with my dad because that's what moms and dads in Texas and other places do, and says, hey, do you know Derek Dawson? I said, yeah, I'm Facebook friends with him. She goes, well, he's on Wheel of Fortune right now. And I'm like, I had no idea. Now, Derek, what's it like to be on a game show and not completely embarrass yourself like I did when I was on Wipeout? That must be fun for you.
You know, I did have a little bit of an embarrassing hiccup there in the toss-up, but luckily pulled pork sandwich made up for it in the end. So I didn't get away too clean, but at least I pulled off the W. So
yeah, you cost yourself a couple thousand dollars by saying Copenhagen, Germany instead of Copenhagen, Denmark. Now, you only had the M. Germany actually would have fit in the available letters. It's just not where Copenhagen is.
Yeah, so I have logic. I just don't have a good, geography knowledge
skills.
Like I said, I would have said Lom Cut.
So when I was a kid, probably like 11 years old, my grandmother actually took me to a taping of Wheel of Fortune, and I got to sit in the studio audience. So I've been on the set before. The wheel is a little smaller than it looks on TV.
So I wanted to ask you, Derek, because listen, when I've never known anybody that's on Wheel of Fortune or Jeopardy, and I want to know everything. I want to know, did you get to meet Vanna White, number one, yes or no? Did you meet Vanna White?
Yeah, absolutely. Vanna actually comes in when they're briefing the contestants in the morning before she goes to hair and makeup and says hi to everybody. It's pretty cool.
Incredible. And then what's it like to spin that wheel?
The wheel's heavy.
Is it?
And the wheel weighs like 2,000 pounds, but like Ben says, it's a lot smaller in person. It's kind of shocking, actually.
Because every time you watch it, you're like, look at that guy. Can barely get that wheel around. Man, if I was on that show, I would spin that thing. It'd take 15 minutes. Is it heavy and is difficult to spin?
Yeah, it's not easy. You have to, you actually practice for probably 10 or 15 tries.
Did you have any, I would be so panicked. I mean, going on Wipeout was hard. It was like they try to kill you, but you know what you're in for. Like, you know, I'm probably going to get injured. I got a broken foot and a concussion, a broken ankle and a concussion. You're not going to get hurt on Wheel of Fortune, but you have the possibility of getting embarrassed. So how nervous were you when the game started?
I completely blacked out. Like, I didn't remember. I didn't remember much of it. People were asking me a lot about what happened, and honestly, a lot of the stuff that I was watching on the show yesterday was somewhat new to me. I experienced it, but definitely didn't recollect much of it. It was kind of interesting. It was a surreal experience.
Now, we're talking to Derek Dawson, who works for the Gulls and was on Wheel of Fortune last night. We just spotted him. We thought we need to find out more about this. You're a sports guy, so sports is all about strategy. I thought you clearly had a strategy last night. Did you in fact, go in with a plan?
Yeah, definitely. So there's a lot of public perception of not buying a lot of vowels, but the vowels are actually your friends. So when you know that there's a vowel in the puzzle for sure, you always buy the vowel because it could be in other parts of words you don't know yet. Ooh. So people kind of criticized me on Twitter last night for buying a lot of vowels, but it got me through that that crossword puzzle, and I didn't relinquish control of the wheel, which actually ended up winning.
It's genius. It's what Ken Jennings or James Holzhauer would do if they played Wheel of Fortune. They'd buy all the vowels as soon as they could.
And see,
because they've never increased the price of vowels.
It's always stayed the same. Yeah.
Of Wheel of Fortune, when you know the rest of the money has gone up, the wheel has gone up, but vowels remain $250. They really should be like $1,000 at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was a coincidence that Jeopardy Goat Week kind of ended right as my episode of Wheel of Fortune aired.
That's true.
And then when are you coming back for Wheel of Fortune Goat Week?
You know, maybe they'll have like a champions. I'm open to it if any of the producers are listening. You know, I'll come back willingly right away. We'll talk to my manager.
You didn't win the bonus game, unfortunately. It was tough bonus puzzle. What was the bonus puzzle that got you?
It was moving onward. If I if I put up the O as my vowel instead of the A, I definitely get it. But
still,
no,
V, W, I mean, how are you ever going to, you're never going to guess V or W in a puzzle.
Yeah.
That is really tough. Now, Woodsy, he walked away. What was the grand total at the end?
Just a little over 22,000 cash and prizes. So
amazing.
I got a trip to Europe.
Yeah, the trip to Europe, how does that work? It was like valued at $7,700, like a train trip
Europe. Question. So here's what I've always wanted to know, too. Oftentimes, when people get married, like Paul, our producer, will be getting married soon. And if he and his wife go on their honeymoon, he'll say, hey, we're going to Cabo. If you'd like to sponsor our snorkeling trip, it costs $100. Now, that we all know that money goes right into their pocket. They're not going on a snorkeling trip. Do you actually win the prize, or do they give you a cash back? Like, it's valued at $7,000. We're going to tack that onto your prizes.
No, so I actually got the option of forfeiting the prize, but you can't take the cash value. So you can either have the trip or you can forfeit the prize, so you don't have to pay the taxes on it. But I'm taking the trip. So
hell
when it's all said and when it's all said and done, and Uncle Sam has his way with me, I'll probably walk away with enough to buy like a group of my buddies some $2 Bud Lights on Friday night at the Bulls game.
Well, that's true, but you'll also
Good work getting the employer in there, too. Yeah.
Invite your buddies on Hardcore Fitness as well for the new 60-day challenge.
And then come
challenge.
By 7 Mile Casino after the
game.
Yeah,
but you could double that money possibly at 7 Mile Casino.
Play this game just
all
as well as you can, Derek.
If they're feeling a little sad, tell them to check out the Total T Clinic. Really, really good. They may have low testosterone, Derek. But so you'll have a little cash in your pocket, and you're going to do how long is the trip in Europe?
It's a 9-day rail tour through Europe.
Bro, that is going to be... And you'll have spending money and the whole thing. You're going to go... You have a girl? You're going to go solo?
I'm taking applications. I'm going to throw another plug out at DoubleD05 on Twitter, Instagram. You can slide into the DMs and put an application.
Like a sugar daddy.
I'm getting in there right now.
I'm going to text you later. That is really, really good stuff, man. That's so fun. And thanks for shedding a little light on the Wheel of Fortune.
One more thing.
Oh, sorry.
Pat Saja, is he as smarmy as he sounds?
He's a pretty cool guy. He's a big hockey fan, so we actually got along pretty well. He was giving me some jabs in between the rounds, saying he was going to put me in the penalty box if I kept kind of beating up on the girls like I was.
Very Ben Higgins-esque of him, by the way. Very Ben Higgins-esque.
Derek, congratulations. Big Wheel of Fortune winner last night. Good job.
Hey, I appreciate it, guys. Do you think that Bobby Bonilla could come back as manager for the Mets since they're paying him already?
Dude, yeah, they're already paying him $1 million a year or something.
Discount. Awesome, man.
Yeah,
very good.
I figured it all out.
That's
all right, boys. Have a good day.
Derek Dawson, thanks, man. On our SDCCU fan hotline, San Diego County Credit Union has low mortgage loan rates. Apply today. Equal housing opportunity. For details, call 877-SDCCU for you or visit SDCCU.com.
I love that. I love how Andy won. What is that? What must that be like?
Don't know. We're in San Diego. We don't know what winning. Well, now we do with the Aztecs.
On a game show, Ben. I don't could care less
you
about.
You were so close. What, 50,000?
50,000 in the finals.
And you had like, what, it was like 14 hours to finish the
Pretty
course?
Pretty much. All I had to do was finish. We're going to win. Yeah. It's cool, man.
All right. On final set, I want to get to this because we had our co-hosts, our co-workers, Gwen and Chris, talking to Buster Olney yesterday.
Yes,
We've been slamming Buster Olney last week for leaving Fernando Tatis Jr. and Manny Machado off his list of the top 10 players at their positions. So they actually brought that up. So we're going to bring the audio to you. Here are Ben and Woods listeners. That's when we come back next, right here on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. There are some landmines the rest of the way, but they got the shot. Coach, we'll be checking in with you as we get up toward March Madness. And quite aware of what they're going through. Check.
My favorite thing.
Overkill.
It's not. It's way overkill.
No, check.
We played all day tomorrow.
Check.
check, check. I like the show better when we're bagging on Buster only more than when we're bagging on me.
Check, check, check.
So I kind of want to go that direction here.
All right, we can do this tomorrow for like an hour. So right.
We will talk about Buster's appearance on Gwen and Chris yesterday after his controversial top 10 list that we were talking about last week. Let's right now get a check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan. Here's Kelly Danick.
Check, 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 check. Check, check.
All right, enough. Well, no, you know me. I love a good sports list. I really do.
More than almost
anything. Putting them
anything.
Together, reading them.
Throwing them on a Mount Rushmore.
Exactly.
Yeah, whatever.
And everyone gets to, is allowed to have their own criteria.
Of course.
When they're putting together a list, including ESPN's Buster Olney, who this offseason, I'm sure his bosses said, we need content. What, you know, you got a top 10 ranking at each position. That's 10 different columns that you can write and help fill all the bits and bytes on the website at ESPN.com this offseason.
Correct.
It just seems still strange to me that you could rank the top 10 third baseman in baseball and not include Manny Machado.
Yeah, I mean, it's strange to me as well. I was looking at the list, Justin Turner, you know, and I didn't hear this yet, so I'm really looking forward to hear his reasoning or justification behind it. And I do know that, well, you know what, let's hear the audio first. That'll make my...
This is from Gwen and Chris yesterday with Buster Olney from ESPN.
I got to tell you that was one, as I was going through it, when I was looking at it, and you know, it comes down to the numbers, it comes down to production, it comes down to the input you're getting from different people with different teams, and I'd say, hey, who would you choose between this guy and this guy and this guy? Third base is an absolutely stacked position, yeah. And if you look at production and the numbers, he's not in the top 10. And hopefully that'll change. I think one of the questions that some of the evaluators that I talk to have is, moving forward, will his production out of Camden Yards get better? Because last year it wasn't, when you're talking about the elite third baseman in the game at a position loaded, it wasn't there.
Okay, so I have never really had a major problem with Buster Olney. I know that there's, you know, we bust his balls about a little bit of a San Diego bias. He has some history here. He's a good baseball man. He knows baseball. And like for that show, that's a good get. Like getting Buster Olney is a big, big deal. There's so many people that I tend to disagree with, but would love to have on the show. I just look at the list, Ben. And if you go down the list, you see, obviously, Bregman, Rendon, Arenado, Matt Chapman, stud, right? Josh Donaldson, Chris Bryant, who, by the way, played a lot of left field. So that was one that kind of went bing, that's going to jump out to me. Eugenio Suarez, yeah, he hit 49 bombs last year. That's a good year. Manny, in a down year, still hit 32 bombs on a new team. You know, he's got Jose Ramirez up there, had one of the worst first halves you could have for a third baseman. And then Justin Turner had a pretty weak year for Justin Turner. So I think Manny should have cracked the top 10, especially over Bryant, Turner, and Jose Ramirez.
And I didn't get the total explanation there from Buster. If you're basing it solely on what Manny did just last year with the Padres, and you really weigh heavily that, you know, he slumped in the second half. Yeah, okay, fine. At the end of last season, Manny probably wasn't one of the 10 most valuable third basemen in the league.
So Jose
wasn't playing that well.
So Jose Ramirez slumped in the first half, but he gets in. That's kind of my deal, is like, Buster, Manny Machado is a top 10 third baseman in the league. There's no question. You ask any team.
But to say, you know, the Camden Yards effect, are you telling me then that pretty much any average third baseman, because by not putting him in the top 10, you're saying that Manny Machado is pretty much an average third baseman. There's only 30 teams.
Right.
You put him in the like the 11 to 15 range. So you're saying he's a flat average third baseman
baseball. There's no
chance. So you're saying any average third baseman in baseball, you put him in Camden Yards, they're going to hit 35 bombs a year. They're going to get on base, you know, 330, 340 clip, hit 280. They're going to drive in 100 runs every single year. Just an average third baseman at Camden Yards is going to do that? I don't think so. Plus, play, you know, spectacular, jaw-dropping defense. That's not an average third baseman. That is a well above average third baseman.
And that was our general point of all this. And Paul said it at the break. He goes, is that the best third base we've seen in San Diego in the last decade? And I said, unquestionably. I mean, Chase Headley had that one good half, and it was mostly just from a power position, hitting a lot of home runs. Chase played pretty good third. Chase Headley didn't play anything like Manny does at third. And you know, for me, you know, I've been labeled the Manny defender. Okay, like, it's not, and I tweeted this yesterday, it's not that hard to not crap on our third baseman after 1 year, and by all accounts, a down year for Manny. No one's ever said, hey, he had a phenomenal year. I don't know what you guys are talking about. We're not idiots, right? We're not total homers.
Right, if you were making a list of the best third base values in the league, like best third baseman for the money, then yeah, I would put Manny.
Urshela is number one.
Much farther down that list.
Correct.
But Buster didn't say anything about contracts.
No.
He didn't say anything about, you know, controversies in the past. And I think that tends to be held against Manny Machado, that he's making a lot of money now, that obviously he's gotten into a couple of situations that got a lot of national attention, whether it was the playoff incident with the Brewers, a couple of other things. You know, yes, you know, has he run hard to first base on every single routine grounder to second in his career? No. But if you're going to really be honest about who the 10 third basemen are in baseball, I still, even after that explanation, don't see how you can include Manny Machado on that.
Yeah,
list.
I'm right there with you. I don't understand it. And
you made a good point about, let's take salary out of it. Buster didn't say anything about salary.
Right.
And start offering just trades between third basemen of other teams.
Hey, Cincinnati. How you doing? AJ Perella here. Would you give us Eugenio Suarez for Manny Machado?
Done.
It would take, the guy would go, oh my God, I just fleeced AJ Preller. Dodgers, hey, how'd you like to move Justin Turner to us and we'll give you Manny? Done. Tomorrow. Like,
right.
Tomorrow. Chris Bryant, the Cubs. Yeah, you know your hybrid left fielder, third baseman, whatever he is. How'd you like to take Manny Machado? Again, all things being equal.
No salary, no number of years on the deal.
Straight across
just
the board.
In terms of what kind of player you're getting versus the one you're giving up, there's very few teams that wouldn't make that
deal. There's no question, man. There's no question. And I'm not saying they did a bad job. I'm not saying they shouldn't have had him on. I think if you can get Buster Olney, my friends, and you're in sports radio, you take Buster Olney. There's no question about it. I do. It has been funny, though. We've talked about it a million times. Crapping on Manny Machado has become, like, you know, secondary only to the hot stove in the offseason. It's hysterical.
You're almost going out on a limb when you don't do it at this point. You're actually,
I'm like the outlier. People are like, oh, you're nuts.
You're the outlier because it's so easy, and the national narrative has become, you know, what's a way that we can, criticize Manny Machado. What's the new way that we can toss some dirt on him, basically?
Yeah, exactly.
And, they're always looking for that story. Any little thing. I mean, remember last season. Literally, he dropped his bat on the way to first, and it became a controversy.
It was a national story. It was a national story.
He didn't throw his bat. He dropped it.
Dropped
he kind of placed it.
Yep.
Where's the order?
And it became a national story. That doesn't happen with any other player in baseball
really
other
doesn't.
Than Manny Machado.
He's literally the biggest villain in baseball.
There's a huge double standard when it comes to Manny Machado coverage now in baseball. And Buster is part of it. He's not, by any stretch of the imagination, the only one. I'm not singling out Buster only.
We love Matty V. Matty V does it. Matty V has done it. I love Matty V. He's the greatest. I would have him on every single day. I would do a weekly. I would do a daily with Matty V. I love Matty V. Me and Matty V got into it about Manny last year. It happens. I get it. And I think until you're here, until you're at the ballpark, and when you see it, I think you honestly, Ben, you almost have to live here in San Diego and be so immersed in it that you really see what a good dude that guy is and how great and how much his teammates love and admire him. And, you know, I will defend him because, again, I'm going to give the guy a break. It's 1 out of 10. Now, in 10 years, Ben, if he hits 230 and, you know, just completely soils himself, yeah, I'll say that was a terrible, terrible signing. But guess what? We're all afforded that luxury. We can all look back. It's what sports talk people love to do more than anything.
I'm actually encouraged almost by Manny Machado's season last year because
no question.
He never really got super hot. He had a really bad, second half of the season by Manny Machado's standards.
Yeah.
And still, the numbers weren't like, you know, horrifically unbelievably bad.
Right. It wasn't Chris Davis.
I mean, that's like, you feel like that's as bad as it's going to get for Manny for a few years. That's a really good baseline of bad to start with, where you feel like, I know he can do more. I'm expecting more. That's a really good season for a guy who never really got locked in
last year. The friggin' spring training thing is going to help him. The knowing where he's going to be is going to help him. And please remember, I mean, this isn't just about me being a Manny Machado homer. I watched this kid since the day he started in Baltimore. He's one of the best baseball players I've ever laid my eyes on in my entire life, ever. He's one of the best I've ever seen, and he's ours here, San Diego. He signed here, and the money was great, and I get it, and no one will ever live up to $30 million a year as a baseball player. But if I have my choice to have him or not have him, give me him all day. Give me him every single day.
All right, last few minutes here. I want to revisit it because I know a lot of people are kind of still in the middle of watching. Some people started yesterday. Some people haven't had a chance to get started yet on the new Aaron Hernandez documentary that came out yesterday on Netflix. It's called Killer Inside. And I watched the first episode. Who watched the most? Out of all of
Paul
us.
Did. Paul did.
I finished it.
Paul
yeah.
went the whole way.
I didn't stop.
It's basically three episodes. Are they each in an hour or
about
so?
About an hour 15?
Between an hour and an hour and a half.
Okay, so
the third one is a little longer.
All right, so we're talking about a 3.5 to 4 hour commitment
basically a little bit less than the Irishman. All right?
Yeah. And pretty much less than the college football national championship game.
First half. Right.
to watch this. If you're interested in, you know, such things and what was a gigantic story in the NFL, they really do an amazing job of gathering together the source material. They went and used the Freedom of Information Act to get all the prison phone conversations between Aaron Hernandez and his fiance and his mom to really put together the puzzle that was Aaron Hernandez and how. Because this is what fascinates us. How can a guy who signed a $40 million contract, has the world at his fingertips, that is essentially quite popular in the Patriots locker room, all of his teammates spoke quite well of him, that they enjoyed being around him. He was a fun-loving guy.
All his coaches said, man, this guy knew X's and O's like nobody's right. Busy. He wasn't one of those guys that showed up and was like, hey, I'm really good and I don't have to work hard. By all accounts, he was a really hard worker and he knew. He was Urban Meyer was like, dude was focused.
He had to prove himself.
I mean, X's
he was a big shot up in Connecticut but
right.
They're like, nobody knows you in Florida.
And he did, man. And they said he was that guy.
And the fascination, of course, is how that guy can also coexist with the other guy, the one tormented by some inner demons that would end up, you know, murdering in cold blood his fiance's sister's boyfriend, who. And this was the other part of it. And we had executive producer and NFL writer Kevin Armstrong on with us earlier today. Odin Lloyd, the guy who killed, who usually, you know, he gets forgotten in the story. It all is about the suspect, the arrest, the trial, the celebrity that is Aaron Hernandez. I didn't know much about Odin Lloyd before watching that first episode. A really well-liked, respected, admired man in his community. This wasn't like this was not like some giant beef, some sort of criminal,
right.
You know, operation gone wrong.
Right. I have no idea what the deal was.
Right.
With this thing,
is
man.
This was a guy that everyone loved in Odin Lloyd. Here was Kevin Armstrong talking about how important it was to him to make sure that part, the Odin Lloyd part of the story, got told in this documentary.
Yeah, and that was imperative to me. You know, from when I first started covering a case, you know, I went down to Faison Street. 10 Faison Street is a block in the Dorchester section of Boston, and that was an incredible story in its own right. Odin was, you know, kind of the man of his house. He had a mother, he had sisters. He was hardworking, you know, a blue collar labor guy and playing semi-pro football on the side just as, you know, kind of a release for him and everything. And that's who Aaron Hernandez killed. You know, this is the $40 million Patriot, you know, putting 6 bullets into a immigrant from, a neighborhood that, you know, was just trying to get by at that time.
Yeah.
And so you know, speaking to the neighbors and everything, that really came to light right away.
And that's really the that's the crux of this documentary, because we hear the story before, you know, rich celebrity targeted, you know, jealousy, people jealous of him. There was, you know, some sort of falling out, a fight, you know, a gun goes off. This is the exact opposite of
that.
Man. Aaron Hernandez had nothing to be jealous of anyone else, had nothing. He had no reason to be threatened, yet constantly, even in prison, he always felt a little threatened in some way, had to prove himself.
Big fan of
over and over again.
Big fan of wanting to prove his manhood.
And that can be a good thing. I mean, that can drive you to success.
Yes.
You know, to work harder than the other guy, to do your extra homework, to be tough out on the field. But when you can't turn that off, and he could not turn that off, it becomes, as we see, you know, debilitating and in destructive in Aaron Hernandez's case. That need to continue to prove himself in every situation, to every person that he encountered, ultimately seems to be what undid his sanity in this case.
And it's funny, too, because they talk about the guys that he was rolling with, right? And they often say, you know, you are the company you keep. But the guys he was rolling with, like, they even made the point of, they're like, these guys weren't like some hard-ass, one guy got arrested for stealing bicycles. You know, like, this was just a goon squad of guys, like, living in a fantasy land. And by the way, the worst criminals in the history of the universe. The guy, Dan Wetzel, said, hey, if he had just erased his own security tapes at his own home, he might have had a chance. Security shows him walking through the house at 3 o'clock in the morning with a gun in his hand. You know, and you're like, Jesus Christ, man, it's your security thing. Like, you could have gone in that night and be like, I need to delete, you know, the video of me driving up, getting out of my car, walking in, grabbing a gun, going down to the basement. Like, it's your own home. That's how dumb these guys
were. And then going, and when they investigated his cousin's house where he had spent a lot of time, finding an SUV that had been part of two other murders that they had been looking for a year, and then the police just stumbling on it as part of this investigation, and then tying Aaron Hernandez to two more murders that he was indicted on, you know, before he committed suicide, obviously in prison, and that one never went to trial. Just, it's a mind-boggling, mind-blowing case.
Yeah, and the fact that, you know, this is a guy that had shot two guys, literally the two guys that he shot, one of them disrespected him and spilled a drink on him. I mean, that's just, you're not human at that point. You're living in a video game at that point. And for them to bring all of that to light again, it is gnarly. I couldn't recommend it enough. It's such a good watch.
Ah, good show today,
great
everybody.
Show,
Hammer Paul, great job. Oh, yeah. Woodsy, we will talk to you tomorrow morning at 5 a.m. Right now, though, we got a keyword to give away. Your Grand Slam giveaway keyword is cage. Text CAGE to 72881 for your chance to win your share of over $180,000 in the Fan's National Cash Contest. Message and data rates apply. Good luck from 97.3 The Fan. We're out. Ben and Woods.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.